Penguin Random House Audio presents Pieces by Helen Oyeyemi. Read for you by Ben Allen, Rosa Escoda, Deepti Gupta, Inte Kim, Dina Tahiri, and Jade Wheeler. I many times thought peace had come, when peace was far away, as wrecked men deem they sight the land at centre of the sea, and struggle slacker, but to prove, as hopelessly as I, how many the fictitious shores before the harbour lie. Emily Dickinson. Chapter 1. Have you ever had an almost offensively easy breakup? The kind where the person you've just broken ties with because of blah, blah, and blah gives you a slight shrug, a thanks for everything, especially your honesty, then walks away whistling Hoagy Carmichael's I Get Along Without You Very Well? Or has that been you, the low-key dumpy? I've never once taken it on the chin like that, never even thought of trying to. Before Honza, I'd only been with similarly emotive types. We could have formed a tribe of some sort, united under a banner that read, Forever Rejecting Your Rejection. But this was just 10 uncomfortable minutes in a coffee shop. Then it was done. Honza had left, and I was all grateful and relieved that we kept it civil. I thought, so that's it then. It's all over. I put in my earphones and walked to the tube station with my brain slurping up my Bright New Beginnings playlist like syrup. The music put me in such a good mood that when the sneaky hand of a pickpocket settled on my backpack, I just slapped it away and shook a finger at him instead of grabbing him and hurling him down the escalator. There were no messages from Honza when I got home. All that remained of the relationship was a set of boxer shorts he'd given me. Tapestry print days of the week boxers with the crucial information embroidered in crimson thread across the waistband of each pair. Pondulé, Uteri, Shtredda. He claimed it made him sad that I always seemed to think it's Monday. And look, now I knew 7 words of Czech. I'd be fluent in no time, he said. The post-breakup days trooped by. I worked, I volunteered, I watched some shows, read some books, saw some friends, wore my set of tapestry print underwear in the usual order. Pondulé, no wistful question or maudlin plea. Uteri, no by the way you're full of shit essay. Shtredda, no saw this and thought of you photo. Čvetek, no offer of a chance to change my mind. Partek, sobota. Nedjele. No, nothing. A cycle repeated for months until the underwear had been washed and worn to rags. Binning that gift set seemed to conclude our conscious uncoupling process. The worst of it is, I think I might be only half joking. Though it wasn't long before I missed the perfection of fit and invested in more of the same. There were a lot of different language options I could have pursued for my new days of the week underwear, but I sought security, not novelty, so I stuck with the original formula. People may betray you, but the right pair of boxers, never. As for Honza Svoboda, I didn't hear another word from or about him until... Chapter 2. I haven't even started and I'm already losing my nerve. Okay, I'll get on with it before I change my mind. Picture it. About 4 years later, a starry-eyed young couple takes a trip on a sleeper train. Xavier laughs at the idea of 38 being considered young. That's how old we both were at the time, though. And overall, not so mature in terms of conduct. Anyway. Our local train station is typical of a small village transport hub in deepest Kent. It's the first and last stop for the village's 2 bus routes, and no matter how determined we passengers are to simply pass through, we tarry. The building has a dishevelled magnetism to it, striking the senses as an overgrown cousin of a country barn, a cousin conversant with the infernal. There it is, the workaday infernal, smoking away in the fade of the exterior paint, and there it is again in the gaslit appearance of each window frame, those shadows that shrink behind the sepia glass. You could just about believe that Lucifer's got a few ham hocks strung up in there, and that he visits every now and then to see for himself how far along in the curing process they've come. But in place of hellish hams, there's a station cafe that serves UNESCO World Heritage level cuppers. To round it all off, there are two train tracks, where four times a day, departing and arriving passengers mingle with the villagers who've come to welcome them or see them off. Two arrivals and two departures every 24 hours isn't quite enough for a railway track to seriously devote itself to being what people say it is. As per our instructions, we were at the station at 6:30 on a Saturday morning in spring, and the honeysuckle, butterflies and other revellers didn't seem too concerned about the comings and goings of the trains. I suppose all the pretty tumbling and fluttering and flapping and whatnot marked them out as ambassadors of the season and secured them right of way. The train was waiting on the London-bound track, looking more like a seafaring creature than a locomotive. Our companion at the time was a mongoose named Arpad, and he bristled at the sight of it. "See the dragon. See its mane," I whispered to him. Sleek scrolls of silvered metal flickered and twisted their way all along its long, low body. The train bore its name like a diadem, scarlet letters dancing along a ruby-red band set just above the window of the driver's cabin. The Lucky Day. The driver's cabin was empty. Arpad examined the station platform, patting the concrete with his paws as if preparing to launch himself into the air and fall upon his foe. Xavier told Arpad he was overreacting, and yet, from where we stood, it looked as if the wheels had tucked themselves over the rail tracks. "See its mane. See its claws." All I said was, "Bling-a-ling-a-ling." A tad conspicuous for a tea-smuggling train, isn't it? A passerby wearing a high-visibility jacket and a yellow hard hat asked if we were off anywhere nice. I said, "No idea, mate." But Xavier draped an arm around me and informed her that we were off on our non-honeymoon honeymoon. An answer that made this life event of ours a destination in and of itself at the same time as downplaying the fact that we really didn't know if we were going anywhere nice. The wording on our ticket was the vaguest conceivable. Arpad may have been unhappy about that, but we non-honeymoon honeymooners didn't much care. We strolled the platform more or less in step for a while, Xavier and I, and we indulged in a bit of sentimental murmuring. I barely recall what it was we said to each other. I'm sure it was classic, "Is this real life?" type commentary. It was the sound of his voice and the sweet sting of his glance that hurt me in ways only he could kiss better. You run the romantic gauntlet for decades without knowing who exactly it is you're giving and taking such a battering in order to reach. You run the gauntlet without knowing whether the person whose favour you seek will even be there once you somehow put that path strewn with sensory confetti and emotional gore behind you. And then, by some stroke of fortune, the gauntlet concludes. The person does exist after all, and you become that perpetually astonished lover from so many of the songs you used to find endlessly disingenuous. It was really happening. We really had found each other, and we really were going away together. Not for the first time, but for the first time travelling under a shared surname. This was to take place aboard a train called The Lucky Day. The train was there, and we were there, and
sample complete. Ready to continue?